I think the highest priority issue that we've been focusing our attention on is the issue of the cultivation tax in Prop 64. Unfortunately, it's somewhat ambiguous. There are three different code sections that indicate that the tax will be collected when the product is harvested, when it leaves the farm, and when it enters the commercial marketplace. From a supply chain perspective, those are very different things. From a cash flow perspective, very different things. And ultimately, harvest can be a six-month-long process. I've grown a lot of cannabis. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. And the smaller you are and the more value add that you need to make your margins, the longer it's going to take to get through that harvest season. So clarifying that that tax is due when products enter the commercial marketplace, which in our opinion means that they've passed a QAQC test, is going to be a very, very important one. I do expect legislation to be introduced this morning that will ultimately, it does propose a solution to that. We will be sponsoring that legislation this year and have been working very closely with the Board of Equalization to make sure that we're giving them something that they like. So cleaning up the tax is absolutely critical. You know, the second issue that is of great concern to our membership is the Type 5 license that will be established in 5 years. The current licensure framework for medical has type 1, 2, and 3, essentially with a limit per single license at 1 acre for outdoor. The type 5 license does not have such a limit. I know that limits on the scale of agriculture are sort of a novel concept from a policy perspective. I personally think that small farms are good for California, and I think that we need more of them, and I think the best way to do that is to keep a little bit of cannabis on every single farm. And so, you know, currently the Type 5 license has a 5-year sunrise window. We think that that at a baseline should be restricted until such time as the federal government authorizes out-of-state sales. As long as the federal government is maintaining artificial constraints on the demand side, we need to carry those over to the supply side. It's just common sense. Last of my three, and then I'll take my fourth, distro. What are we going to do with distribution? I want to be very, very clear, though, about what is and isn't in Prop 64. Prop 64 did not make the requirement for distribution go away. It simply said that you can hold a distribution license in addition to another license. So I want to caution, especially smaller, less capitalized businesses, you do not gain anything through the changes that were made in Prop 64. You will not be able to afford to hold a cultivation and a distro license. Maybe you will. These guys are doing a great job to keep this affordable. I just, you know, I want to acknowledge that. But the distribution step doesn't go away. It's just something that if you can afford it and if you're sophisticated and savvy enough, you can cross-license and include it. Of course, under the MCRSA, it is mandated independent, and whether or not it's an independently owned entity or a cross-licensed, vertically integrated entity, we'll see. So we don't have an opinion on that. We are bitterly divided on that subject. And then the fourth one is a super exciting one. It's the best thing ever, is hemp. I know cannabis is super cool, but almonds are not really that awesome from an irrigation perspective, in my opinion. I love our almond farmers. We've got a fantastic almond industry, but it's a 15-year irrigation cycle. And anything you can do with an almond, you can do with a hemp plant, and it's a 90-day irrigation cycle. And as we start looking critically as a state at the 21st century and our water demands, and ultimately the fact that we're consuming too much water, I think that this is going to be a very important piece to work on. So those are our highest priorities. We are tracking about 24 bills currently. Our ledge priorities are somewhere next door. It's about a 6-page document, but those are the four.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I have a question for you. I think we're going to do a little bit of a dialogue amongst ourselves. So if you could ask or make any request of our two regulators up here, what would it, on behalf of your members and constituents, what would it be?
Well, I did, and they've done it. So it's sort of more of a retrospective. You know, this has been a pretty nerve-wracking experience for me. You know, I was 29 years old and had everything I ever dreamed of, you know, a couple ranches, great business, just literally living the dream. And then our current board vice chair and a close friend of mine went to jail, and it just all came crashing down like, oh, this is still very, very real. And then, you know, we started this transition process of getting out there and seeing all the problems from the lack of regulation. And so I didn't actually think this was going to happen. This was always something growing up that was going to happen to us, that, you know, legalization would eventually come and it would just crush us. And so, you know, the first thing that I wanted was reassurance that this would actually happen. And, you know, back in February, Lori and I sat down together and she was basically, you know, are you ready to get this done? And I said, that was my question for you. And Lori's commitment to that timeline and the focus that we are going to get this done. For the first time ever in my life, I feel like the state of California is genuinely an ally in this process. So stick to the timeline and get it done. And then, you know, when Amber and I sat down, I was like, Amber, there's a lot of growers in this state. Are you prepared for the scope of what you're taking on? And the timeline is quick. There's a lot of us. We're a unique bunch. We're a diverse bunch. And these two have given me, I think, a lot of confidence and a lot of confidence that we're going to get this done together and that the world's going to be better for it.
Thank you. So, not to put a damper on all the fun, but we're talking a lot about...
Regulations are fun.
I know, I love regulations. It's so exciting. You get to read and write and complain about things you don't like. So, you know, we have an administration in office at the federal level, and we still have federal prohibition. And the most frequent question I get as a lawyer is, what are we going to do? So I'm going to turn to the other attorney on the panel, Luke. In light of this new administration, what, if anything, are you ensuring your clients know before they proceed with operating a cannabis business or while they're currently operating?
Thanks, Sunshine, and thanks, everybody, for being here, showing up on a rainy day. I get this question all the time as well. It is certainly something that concerns everybody who is involved, and I think this being a regulatory panel, I'm going to try to focus in on that side of it. Of course, there's a whole sort of political element of that. You've got an administration dealing with a lot of other issues, and if you ask people close to that administration right now, they're kind of like, cannabis? What are you talking about? We have got a lot of other stuff we're dealing with first. I don't know if you've noticed. So there's a whole panel on that later in the day, so I'll leave that stuff aside a little bit. But from a regulatory perspective, I think the real issue for clients who are, or just anybody, looking at the space is having an accurate understanding of what the real risks and dangers are out there. Being able to look at the issues from the federal government's perspective, as well as from the cannabis industry's perspective, right? Because while we all are on the side of wanting to make this a well-regulated, effective marketplace, and as Hezekiah was just saying, have a common goal in that respect, there's a little bit of a bubble effect that can go on. And, you know, you can get a lot of advice out there that's really advocacy-related, and it's sort of myopic from that point of view. And it's really, at least in my view, critically important to understand how the other side looks at it, right? To try to look at it from, you know, a Jeff Sessions perspective, or from a district attorney's perspective, or from a county sheriff's perspective in any one of the many counties across the state of California that are very sort of balkanized in terms of how they view enforcement priorities and how they view this industry and, you know, potentially how they're going to go out and act upon those views on a day-to-day basis. So whether you're talking, you know, at the state level or at the federal level or at the local level, I think the critical thing for me that we try to give everybody, you know, a good idea of is accurately and objectively lay out all the risks, right? I mean, everybody who's looking at this industry, everybody in this room, I'm sure is aware that we still have illegality issues at the federal level, right? You're taking some risk by walking into this business. And we've all got to be okay with that. And, you know, we all are to some extent. But, you know, making an informed risk decision, I think, with the right information and the accurate information from both perspectives, both from the advocacy perspective as well as from, you know, the very hardcore enforcement perspective, I think as long as you have those laid out in front of you the right way, then you can make the right decision for yourself, for your partners, for your money, for your business, for everybody involved. So I I spend a lot of time trying to sort of, you know, drive that point home with everybody I talk to, give them a well-rounded view, and let them make a well-informed decision.